You are listening to NTC Messina's podcast, where our desire as the family of God is to simply know God, love one another, and make disciples.
How are we doing? Doing all right? Feels like a somber day, doesn't it? It's like sometimes you find yourself caught in times where there's both things to celebrate and things to mourn. There's both things to be praying for and contending for and things to rest in. And it feels like one of those moments. I know, like Christmas is my favorite time of the year, this month from Thanksgiving till Christmas. It's really just that count. Anybody have an Advent tree in their home? We buy those calendars at Walmart with the little chocolates in them. We got one for our dog this year. Yeah, priorities. The kids love giving it to the treats to the dog. The dog gets all excited. We have a one that we reuse every year. It has little drawers in it, and I just love the countdown to Christmas. But it is true that at the same time, while we're excited of what's to come, there's also oftentimes grief and mourning and heartache and losing your aunt this week, Ron losing your sister, and sometimes those first anniversaries. My father-in-law passed away back in April, and my grandfather passed away in September, and just going into the holidays, the first holiday without, somebody that's just so a huge part of your life, or relationships that can be fractured. There's just so much emotion wrapped up in different seasons. You know, as the Martins are this morning cleaning up and trying to rebuild and trying to also to go to church and celebrate. It's a tough moment, isn't it? And Advent, this idea, these Advent calendars, Advent counting down, the word Advent speaks of arrival, that we're waiting for something to arrive. There is a hope that defines the Christian journey. There's a hope of what it means to follow Jesus. Hope usually means we have something to hope for because we have a need for hope, doesn't it? Because life isn't all roses, right? I love roses, but life isn't all roses. And hope, arrival, Advent, looking forward to Christmas Day, looking forward to Christmas morning, looking forward to Jesus invading our lives. The Christmas narrative, as we understand it, as we read about it, comes from the books of Matthew and Luke primarily. But John, in his gospel, I want to open up to John chapter 1 to begin this morning. John begins his story a little bit differently than Matthew, a little bit differently than Luke. Not talking about the shepherds, not talking about Jesus being born in a manger, but he starts much differently. And in John chapter 1, verse 1, it says, "In the beginning, the Word already existed." Reading from the New Living Translation. "In the beginning, the Word already existed. The Word was with God, and the Word was God." What are we talking about in verse 1? What's the subject? God, I don't know. What's the subject of the sentence? Go back to the Word. We're homeschooling my 9-year-old right now. We're doing a lot of grammar, predicates, subject. The subject of the sentence is the Word. So we're talking about the Word, but we don't know what the Word is. The Word was God. The Word was with God. Verse 2, the Word is a He, existed in the beginning with God. The beginning. Verse 3, God created everything through Him. So this Word, through the Word, everything was created, John tells us. Nothing was created except through Him. Everything comes through Him. Verse 4, the Word gave life to everything that was created. Life comes from the Word. His life brought light to everyone. Verse 5, the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness can never extinguish it. What an interesting way to start a story. Verse 6, God sent a man, John the Baptist, to tell about the light so that everyone might believe because of his testimony. John himself was not the light. He was simply a witness to tell about the light. We're talking about the Word. We're talking about this He. We're talking about light. Verse 9, the one who is the true light, who gives light to everyone, was coming into the world. Light is coming into the world. The Word is coming into the world. Verse 10, he came into the very world he created, but the world didn't recognize him. He came to his own people, and even they rejected him. But to all who believe him and accepted him, he gave the right to become children of God. They are reborn, not with a physical birth resulting from human passion or plan, but a birth that comes from God. And here's verse 14. So the Word became human and made his home among us. I love the way the Message translation says it. It says, the Word became flesh and blood and moved into the neighborhood. The creator of the universe, the one through whom creation happened, the one who gives life to everything, the one who brings light into the darkness, put on flesh and blood and moved into the neighborhood. In the top of your note says that I want to talk about Jesus' words regarding friends and food. I thought that was an interesting title. Talking about being a friend of God. Talking about this, when I speak this morning about friendship, I want us to think, when we hear the word friend, I want us to think that close friend, the friend that sticks closer than a brother, a friend that you can count on, a friend that's always there, a friend that shows up when your business is burning down, a friend that picks you up when you're down, a friend who's there to celebrate with you. Not just simply somebody that you know their name, you see them once in a while. We all have tons of friends like that. But I want to talk this morning about friends that are there with you all the time, through thick and thin. For approximately 33 years, Jesus lived, he walked, he ate among us. He was born in humility. We know that Christmas story. He was born in a very humble situation. He worked as a tradesman. All my life I've referred to Jesus as a carpenter. Now I understand he's probably more of a stonemason. They worked more with stone than they worked with wood. We work with wood here in the North Country. But he was a carpenter. He built things. Probably stone. He was probably, his hands were strong, were well worn. He was a tradesman. Jesus, the creator of the universe, probably sat around a fire often. You just picture the creator of the universe. You know, at Christmas time, we have our nativity sets and we have the scenes and we picture Jesus as a baby in a manger. And then just picture him for 33 years, approximately 33 years, he's just living amongst us, flesh and blood, moving into the neighborhood. So many of Jesus' words were captured in the in-between moments of life. You know, we read about Jesus walking and what he says while he's walking. We read about Jesus in people's homes and the things that he says and does while he's in people's homes. We read about Jesus being around the table and what happens around the table. We read about Jesus in a boat and sleeping in a boat or standing in a boat, teaching from a boat. All these in-between moments, we see Jesus. I've been reflecting recently just about this idea of friendship. And, you know, when our kids are young, their life is filled with friends. You know, when your kids are always, our kids are always looking for play dates. Can we have so-and-so over? And not as much this year, but, you know, there's so many things that friends do. We have play dates, get-togethers, movie nights, pickup games. I remember growing up, we played basketball and football constantly. I was always the last one picked. But I was always picked. We all played. And it doesn't matter how bad or good you are, the 10, 12, 15 of us, we were just constantly playing basketball, playing football, breaking legs and doing all kinds of things. Bike rides around the neighborhoods. I love when Jeremiah or Colin come by our street and just says, "Ask your home, let's go for a bike ride." They want to go down to Sunoco and get a Mexican Coke. They want to hang out. They want to just be with their friends. I play sports. My son started cross country this year, and just there's always friend time. And yet, don't kids, or at least maybe it's just mine or me when I was a kid, talk about being bored? There's nothing to do. There's nothing to eat. There's nothing to watch. They have Netflix and everything, but there's nothing to watch. There's nothing to do. They have so much friend time, but nothing to do. And then this morning, I took my boys to Via Main. We were going to go yesterday. We ended up going out to see the Martins, but we went to Via Main. And oftentimes when we walk over to Via Main and I go in and Man, I'm the youngest person in the restaurant by about 20, 30, 40 years sometimes. And, you know, there's four guys over here and three guys over here, and somebody always comes and sits down at a table, and half the time I hear them saying, I'll just take the usual, or they bust their own tables, they take care of their own dishes. And it's like, these guys, that's just what they do. They go and they hang out with their friends at Via Main. I deliver Meals on Wheels. I talk about this often. And this week, one of the ladies on my route was telling me about her two sons that live in Albuquerque. And I just, in the holiday season, I just was, you know, sad for a moment thinking of her two sons are so far away and in New Mexico. And every Thursday or Friday, I walk in and she's watching Judge Judy. And that's just what she's doing. And I pick up her garbage cans and put her up and put her garbage cans away and just have that moment of interaction. And I see people, you know, not having a lot of relationships around them as we get older and life takes its course, and they find themselves maybe bored again. And as I've said before, I don't think I've been bored in about 20 years. Because when you're in the middle of your life, there is so much to do. There's always something wrong at the house. There's always something broken. There's always something I got to do with the car. There's always a job to do. There's always work. There's always something. I'm never bored. And yet what I've been observing recently is that this 20, 30, 40 years between being a child and getting older, we're so busy, but we don't seem to have a lot of friends. Not close friends. I mean, I consider all of you my friends. We all have friends. But is friend time a priority? Is sitting around the fire talking a priority in our lives? So I know we do sometimes. Small groups is such a huge, house church is such an important aspect of our lives. But life gets busy, and we tend to not make as much room for friends because there's so many other things to do, right? The demands of life. And sometimes, you know, friendships, they bring pain. And I talk to a number of you and work with all of you who, you know, experience pain in friendship, and then we oftentimes close ourselves off from friends at different times. Or we don't want to be hurt again, or we insulate our lives, or we fill our lives with other things. Friendship isn't always a priority. My wife and I like to watch a show on TV. This is not an endorsement of anything. But we watched this show called This Is Us. It follows a family about 50 years in the life of a family. And the majority of the show is three siblings and their families. And so you're watching three siblings' families. And there was a scene a little while back where, I wrote the names down, Beth is talking to Randall. So a wife is talking to a husband. She's explaining what's happened in her brother's life. Stick with me here. talking to her husband. She says, well, You know Madison, what's going on with Madison? He says, this is the line that I want to highlight. He says, I know who Madison is. She's our family's only friend. And I thought back over the course of the show, and you have these three families, and yet it's true, they have each other, but they don't really have a lot of friends in their life. And that line, our family's only friend, it's like, oh, poor guy. And again, a little bit of downer here, I guess, but I observe this in us, that we have relationships. Hey, good to see you. How you doing? Good. Really surface. But are we really walking with each other? Are we really in each other's lives? Do you have people that you lean on day in and day out? I want to challenge in that area this morning. 2020 has isolated us in so many ways. You know, we wear masks everywhere we go, and, you know, even just the experience of wearing a mask and walking by somebody with a mask, you don't really see people when they have a mask on. You don't see their smile. You don't see them mouth something to you like, hey, how's it going? It's kind of like, what'd you say? We're more isolated. We're not gathering as much as we used to gather. Even hospitals and nursing homes, when we find people in vulnerable positions, are alone, isolated. In nursing homes and hospitals. 2020 has isolated us. Is it just me? 2020 has isolated us. I really think that it's taken a toll on our souls. Genesis 2 starts with that it is not good for man to be alone. We need each other. We need each other. Let's go to John chapter 15. Look at some of Jesus' words. John chapter 15, beginning in verse 5. I'm going to read a few verses here. The context, this is the hours between the Last Supper and Jesus' arrest. And if you look at your Bible, John 14, 15, 16, 17, it's all red if you have a red letter Bible. It's all red because it's these hours between the Last Supper, when Jesus is with his disciples celebrating the Last Supper, and when he's arrested. Jesus has a lot to say that really hit his disciples, who are like, we got to write this down. There's a lot of good stuff here. And Jesus says in verse 5, John chapter 15, beginning in verse 5, he says, yes, I am the vine, and you are the branches. Those who remain in me, and I in them, will produce much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing. Anyone who does not remain in me is thrown away like a useless branch and withers. Such branches are gathered into a pile to be burned. But if you remain in me, and my words remain in you, you may ask for anything you want, and it will be granted. When you produce much fruit, you are my true disciples. This brings great joy to my Father. Verse 9, I have loved you, even as the Father has loved me. Remain in my love. I'm going to pause right there. This word, what's the word that keeps getting repeated in these verses? Remain. Jesus is saying, remain in me. Remain in my love. As I was reflecting on this week, the sense that I get from Jesus is he's encouraging them, you're going to have to remain. You're going to have to, this word abide, to stay, to stick close, to continue, to endure. Why would he tell us over and over again to remain if it was going to be easy to remain? I think what he's saying is it's going to be tough. Life is tough. Life throws curveballs at us all the time. Life is not easy. That's why we need the encouragement to remain, to abide, to endure. It's like, go back to the book of Joshua, and God is talking to Joshua, and he says over and over again, be strong and courageous, be strong and courageous, be strong and courageous. Why? Because he's going to have to be strong and courageous. He's going to be fighting some battles. Well, here Jesus is saying, remain, endure, stick with me, stay with me, remain in my love. To remain in my love. We have to abide. This over and over again. Let's continue. Verse 10. It's all right. Technology, it works when it works, and it doesn't work when it doesn't work. Verse 10, when you obey my commandments, you remain in my love. So Jesus has given a little bit of definition what he means by remaining. He says you need to listen to what I've said, to obey my commandments, to remain in my love. Just as I obey my Father's commandments and remain in his love. It's all right. I keep hearing words, and I'm like, it sounds really good. What's that, bro? What's that saying? It's my verse. The Bible reads to us. Start over in verse 9. I have loved you even as the Father has loved me. Remain in my love, Jesus says. When you love my commandments, you remain in my love. Just as I obey my Father's commandments, I remain in his love. I have told you these things so that you'll be filled with my joy. Yes, your joy will overflow. When I'm reading this, what I imagine Jesus doing is he's telling us, do you want to know how to live right? Do you want to know how to find joy in life? Do you want to know the best way to live? Obey my commandments. Remain in my love. Verse 12, this is my commandment. Love each other in the same way I have loved you. There is no greater love than to lay down one's life for one's friends. You are my friends if you do what I command. I no longer call you slaves because a master doesn't confide in his slaves. You are my friends since I have told you everything the Father told me. What's Jesus saying here? He's saying, you got to remain in me. You got to stick with me. You got to endure. Obey my commandments. And then he shifts, love one another. I have showed you what it's like to love. He's like, I have told you what the Father told me to tell you. I've told you everything. I've walked with you for 3 years, Jesus is saying. I've been with you. These are the closing hours. We've finished the Last Supper. We're headed to him being arrested. He's going to be headed toward the cross. He's telling them, I have walked with you. I've remained with you. I've given you instruction. I've loved you. I've told you everything. I've shared everything with you. So stick with me. Love each other. Remain. Friendship requires action. It requires intention, choice, decision. Because when we choose to remain, it requires, you know, a little bit of follow through, doesn't it? Choosing to stand, choosing to stay, choosing to love, to stick with it, no matter what. It requires an action. It requires decision. It requires choice, because it's difficult. Jesus lived with them. He shared everything with them. He modeled love, and he modeled friendship to them. In 1972, there was a French adventurer and scientist named Michael Siff, who famously shut himself in a cave in Texas for more than 6 months. Hear that? He shut himself in a cave in Texas for more than 6 months. What still clocks in as one of the longest self-isolation experiments in history, meticulously documenting the effect on his mind over those 205 days, Siff wrote that he could barely string thoughts together after a couple of months. By the five-month mark, he was reportedly so desperate for company, he tried unsuccessfully to befriend a mouse. Reminds me of Tom Hanks and Wilson. Got that picture for me? Remember this? Tom Hanks is on a deserted island and his friend Wilson? Or is this 2020? You know, I get isolated. A recent article from Health Affairs, a website, magazine, it says, being socially connected in meaningful ways is actually key to human health and survival. Given that humans are a social species, loneliness is our biology signaling a need to reconnect socially. Just like hunger signals us to eat, thirst signals us to drink water. Proximity to others, particularly trusted others, signals safety. When we lack proximity to others, our brain and body may respond with a state of heightened alert. This can result in increases in blood pressure, stress hormones, inflammatory responses, which, if experienced on an ongoing basis, can put an increased risk for a variety of chronic illnesses. Science is just telling us what God told us in Genesis chapter 2. It is not good for man to be alone. We were designed for relationships. We were designed for socialness, for to be together. And those verses often get applied. Jesus applies them to marriage. God in Genesis refers to marriage there. But it's not just marriage. We were designed for relationship. And Jesus is closing out his hours with the disciples, and he's saying, listen, I've lived with you. I've walked with you. I've told you everything that I could possibly tell you. I've given everything to you. I've showed you what it looks like to love. I've showed you what it looks like to love each other. Now remain in me. Stick with each other. Love each other. A friend, there's nothing greater than a friend that lays down his life for his friend. He's giving them some instruction. Isn't it great when you see the joy of giving in kids? When kids get excited to give, I mean, kids get excited to receive. Don't get me wrong. We know that. But isn't it beautiful when you see the giving in children? You know, isn't the great part of Christmas the act of giving? Now, we love to receive and we like to make lists and all of those things, but really, the giving part of Christmas, the giving part of relationship is really just, it's stunning to watch at times. This joy of giving and being a friend. And friendship, when I'm looking at these scriptures, as I've been reflecting, friendship, as Jesus describes it there, is about what you do for the other. He says, love one another. a friend lays his life down. Friend is an action, an intention, a choice that you make toward another person. Because friendships can be difficult. Friendships can be hard. Relationships can cause hurt and pain and strain, and we can let each other down. But what I see Jesus encouraging us here in John chapter 15 is this encouragement to remain, to love, to stick with it, to care for one another, to take that step, to be the one that's doing that action. As we say all the time, Christianity is not supposed to be just a religion. Greg said it this morning, how we're not just checking off a box and tuning in on Sunday, tuning in online or coming. It's about something so much more than that, that we're coming to meet Jesus. We're coming to gather together. We're coming for relationship, relationship with Jesus, relationship with each other. And the test that Jesus puts before us here is the command to love one another. How there's an action. We say it all the time that we want to know God, to love one another, and to make disciples, to make that choice to love each other, to be there for each other. It's also a part of our mission. In John chapter 17, just a little bit later, John chapter 17, verse 20. It's going to be on the screen. John chapter 17, verse 20. Jesus is praying. And he says, I'm praying not only for these disciples, but also for everyone who will believe in me through their message. That's us. I pray that they will all be one, just as you and I are one, as you are in me, Father, and I am in you. May they be in us, so that the world will believe that you sent me. As we do this, as we practice this, as we love each other, as we love the world around us, as we love everyone, Jesus says that that's how people will see him. We've been talking here and there about the body of Christ and about how we show Jesus through us, through the hands and feet of Jesus in the world, that the church shows the world, shows everybody what Jesus is like, how Jesus walked among his disciples for 33 years. He walked with his disciples for 3 years, and he showed what it looks like to be with them day in and day out. We get to do that for each other, but it's an action. It's something that we choose to do. Jesus didn't just show up, you know, on Sunday and deliver a great word. He didn't just go away for a while and then come back and just give a teaching. He lived amongst his disciples. He lived amongst the people. He lived with them. He ate with them. He walked with them. He knew their parents. He welcomed their kids. He interacted with all segments of society. He was known. You know, think about influencers today and think about Twitter and Instagram. Jesus was known everywhere he went without social media, without Facebook. Jesus had thousands of followers without any of that. They just knew who he was because word spread about him beyond what we could imagine today. People knew who Jesus was. I titled this Friends and Food. Well, let's talk about food for a second. Picture Jesus over dinner. Picture Jesus sitting over a table with food, with friends. He was engaged. He was in their lives. He was in their homes. In the book of Luke, there's 10 times where it talks about Jesus being at a meal. In Luke chapter 4, Jesus is at Peter's house. He heals Peter's mother-in-law, and then his mother-in-law gets up, and she cooks a big meal for them. And then a bunch of other people come with people that need to be healed, and Jesus touches them and heals them. But it's in the context of Jesus going into Peter's house, sitting there, eating a meal. He's in with them. In Luke chapter 5, Jesus calls Matthew, and then he goes to Matthew's house for a big meal. And this is where it said, people are saying about Jesus, do you eat with such scum? They look at who he's sitting with, who he's with, and they say, do you eat with such people like this? And he does. He's there with them. He's in their lives. In Luke chapter 7, he's at a Pharisee's house. He's not picky. He eats with scum and with Pharisees. In Luke chapter 10, he's at Mary and Martha's house. In Luke chapter 11, he's at another Pharisee's house. In Luke chapter 14, he's at a leader of the Pharisees. He's eating dinner. I find it interesting the details that Luke brings out. Jesus goes to their home. He sits with them. He eats with them. In Luke chapter 22, he's there at the Last Supper. And in Luke chapter 24, one of my favorite ones, he shows up amongst his disciples, and he says, do you got anything to eat? He comes back from the dead, appears in the room with them. He says, "Hey, you got anything to eat?" I'm sure there's more spiritual stuff there, but I like that phrase. Do you have anything to eat? Maybe we'll memorize that one next year. Why do I bring this up? Jesus says in John chapter 15, "I have loved you. I've told you everything. Remain in me." Picture him sitting at Matthew's table. Picture him sitting at Mary's table. Picture him at Zacchaeus' house. Picture him at these homes, sitting with people, eating with people in their lives. This is the creator of the universe. John starts by talking about the one through whom everything was made, everything that has been made came through him. That person, that creator, that word sat down and had a meal with just about everybody he could. Relationship. And then in John chapter 21, toward the very end, he comes and he's with Peter and John, and he says, "Come and eat breakfast." It says that he's there cooking breakfast for them. This is relationship, Jesus. In Luke chapter 7, Jesus is getting criticized for who he associates with. No matter what he does, he's getting criticized by people. And in Luke chapter 7, he responds. He's kind of short in this one. I imagine a little bit hot. He says, "For John the Baptist didn't spend his time eating bread or drinking wine, and you said he's possessed by a demon. And the Son of Man, referring to himself on the other hand, feasts and drinks, and you say he's a glutton and a drunkard, a friend of tax collectors and other sinners. But wisdom is shown to be right by the lives of those who follow it." Jesus' wisdom in John chapter 15 is these three things. Remain in my love. Jesus says, remain in me. Obey my commandments and love each other. Remain in Jesus. Stick with him. Life's going to be tough. Things are going to go sideways sometimes. Remain with me, he says. Obey my commandments. I know what's best for you. He's our creator. He knows what's best for us. Just obey my commandments and love each other. That's what it means to follow Jesus. That's what it means to live like Jesus. And there's a whole lot of other stuff, but when Jesus sums up the whole Old Testament with love God and love each other, I think if we can get those two things as our focus, we'll do all right. But how often do we not? How often do we get divided? How often do we find ways to say us and them? How often do relationships break down? How often do friends fade away? It's on us to love. It's on us to seek restoration. It's on us to offer forgiveness. It's on us to lend a hand. It's on us to offer a cup of water to somebody that needs it. It's on us. Yesterday, I got a text from my daughter, Sydney. She's down in New York City with a team ministering to homeless, and she sends me a text. You got that on the screen? She says, "Bring back Bagel Sunday." Then she writes, "We are willing to start," I think she means petition. We're willing to start a petition. Then I say something, "Well, we definitely can't do it until COVID passes, but I hear you." And she says, "Thank you." But then she says, "But we didn't do it before COVID." If you remember, if you haven't been here in the last couple of years, we used to do a thing called Bagel Sunday. How often do we do it? Every month? Every month we picked a Sunday where, and I reminded her later, well, we used to not have this balcony, and we used to not have the nursery, and the youth right there. It was a big open space, so we could set out tables, and we had bagels. And this is probably the third time over the last 3 years that she's not picking it every month, but every once in a while, she's with her friends. She's down with Olivia and, who else is down there? Olivia and Juliana Miller is down with her. And I imagine them sitting around saying, "Remember when we used to stay after service and eat bagels?" And I just imagine her being like, "That was so much fun." My 16-year-old daughter, she's probably 13 because we haven't done it in a while, is imagining, "You know what was really fun? When we just stayed after church and just hung out. When we poured juice, we had cups of cranberry juice and orange juice, and I think we had coffee and bagels and muffins, and just would stay and remain with each other." She remembers that fondly because that's what life's about, relationship. And we come to church or we go and we live our lives. I mean, we drop our kids off now. I drop my kids off at school and they put their mask on, they get in line, they file in, they file out, and they aren't sitting around a table at lunch together. And this isn't an indictment on COVID. This isn't saying the way what we should do. This is just an acknowledgement of the time that we find ourselves in, that we are more disconnected and isolated than ever right now. And the need isn't for us to rise up and revolt, although maybe someday. But the need for us is to acknowledge that we need each other, that we need relationship, and to ask, well, what can we do about that? I mean, what can we do to get into each other's lives? You know, maybe it's bake some cookies and deliver them to your neighbors, or maybe it's to send a Christmas card, or maybe it's to pick up the phone. I say this all the time. If somebody pops into your mind and you think about them, it's probably the Holy Spirit saying, call them, text them, reach out to them. You know, regularly people come up and ask me, hey, whatever happened to so-and-so? To which I respond, give them a call and find out. We need each other, and we need to remember each other. We need to step toward each other. We need to reach out to each other. We need each other. A shared meal, which we see in the book of Luke, Jesus sharing a meal, represents friendship, community, hospitality, grace. There's a sign in Via Main that I noticed last time I was there. My son noticed it this morning. It reads, enter as strangers, leave as friends. Wouldn't that be great if that's what the church was known for? Enter as strangers. We all come from so many different places, so many different ways of thinking, so many different experiences, so many different jobs, so many different areas of living. But we come as strangers and we want to leave as friends. And that prayer from John chapter 17, where Jesus says that they may be one so that the world will know that you sent me. Is it really that simple? I think it is. We need to declare the good news. We need to declare the gospel. But I think that we will declare it by our lives and by our love for one another. And there are so many verses that we could have looked at in this series, so many verses that I could have looked at today. Jesus' words talking about forgiveness and reconciliation and loving our enemies. Jesus has a lot to say about those things. I love even Matthew chapter 18, which is a passage that people go to for how to deal with when somebody has sinned, when somebody has made a mistake. What are we supposed to do with that? Really, the focus of that passage is when a brother hurts you, this is how you reconcile. When something happens, when somebody does something wrong, this is how you go to them to get your brother back. It's all about reconciliation. It's all about forgiveness. It's all about loving each other. That's what we're supposed to be marked by, what we're supposed to be known by. And yes, we hurt each other. We say the wrong thing sometimes, or we comment on Facebook something that we shouldn't comment, and something happens. But Christians, we are supposed to rise above that to say, you know what, you matter more. To ask forgiveness, to make the step, to send a card, to send a text, to make some cookies. I invite you to stand with me. In following, Jesus invites us to follow him and to live this life, to live in relationship with him. I don't know where you all are at this morning, what's going on in your life, but Jesus wants to welcome you in, and he wants to be welcomed into your life. I love these images, these pictures of Jesus going into homes, of Jesus sitting around a table, of Jesus eating dinner, because that's the God of the universe. He wants to put on flesh and blood and move into the neighborhood. He wants to live with you. He wants to do life with you. He wants to be a part of your life. He wants to be in your life. When we accept Jesus, when we accept Jesus into our life and we welcome him in, he says the Holy Spirit is sent so that he can be with us. He can remind us. He can walk with us. He can speak into our lives. It's a relationship. And it's a relationship that then gets turned to every other relationship. And in this season of being isolated and in this season of celebration, it's my prayer that we all just feel the warmth of Jesus and the warmth of relationship. I invite you to pray with me. God, we thank you for who you are. We thank you that you are not a distant, far-off God who just throws commands at us, but you are a God who put on flesh and blood, moved into the neighborhood, did life with your creation. You walked among us. You shared meals with us. You were there. God, and that's the God, as you were 2,000 years ago, that's the God who you are today, that you want relationship with us, that we want to be in relationship with you, God. God, I pray for all of us, God, that we feel your presence evermore this Christmas, that we feel you with us, that we feel your Holy Spirit leading us, guiding us. As we're isolated in this season, as it's been an unusual time, I pray that relationship just increases, that we feel that we reach out to each other, that we are reached out to. God, that we show each other what your love is like, that we love each other, that we remain, that we take that extra step. God, I thank you for all of us. I pray for Messina, for the North Country, for this whole region, God, that people will just feel warmth this holiday season. God, that your church would be the church and show love and friendship and mercy and grace. And for every person here, that they would feel that as well. In Jesus' name, amen. Thank you for being here. Look forward to next Sunday celebrating Christmas together. God bless.
Thank you for listening to NTC Messina's podcast. We hope you join us next week and have a blessed day.